The goal in this podcast is to have one person in the audience at the end of the episode.
The goal in this podcast is to have one of us on this recording.
Hey, I logged on successfully, guys. That's a win right there.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on virtual trail runs with interesting guests that teach us a little bit about ourselves as runners and hopefully make us better runners and possibly even better human beings. Today's episode is our first attempt to have a virtual audience join us in a recording and hopefully jump into the recording studio and virtually ask us anything. Here we go.
Scott, have you tried the new Killam PX pant from Path Projects?
I have. I've been wearing them around the house for the last probably 2 weeks. I have yet to go run in them, which I'm just waiting to go running in them because it's not cold enough here in Northern California, but I'm waiting to. I love them around the house. They fit so nice and they're so comfortable.
You know, it's like a pair of shorts. You love shorts for the right reason. These feel just as good as shorts. And you know what? You look good in them too. Well, I don't know if you look good in them, Scott, but my mirror says I look good in these things.
They have a relaxed upper body fit with the tapered legs with that little zipper, so they fit nice and tight around there. They have tons of pockets that you are aware of from their shorts. They have the back pocket. There's just a lot of pockets. You can store a lot of stuff in this.
And they use the Tory fabric, which makes this pant durable with great stretch, makes them comfortable, stronger, lighter, and they can wick. So if it gets wet, you don't have to worry about it.
Go to pathprojects.com and check out that Killam PX pant and all their shorts and their baseliners. Athletic Greens AG1. Freeman, I don't think that I would have ever admitted to this, but I think I'm addicted to this stuff.
You are. Why is that? What would even make you say that? Because I have my reason. Yours first.
Well, first of all, it doesn't taste like grass clippings. It's so good. It's easy to mix, and it just starts my day.
Now, the reason I love it is it's almost like a meal replacement. It satisfies me. I take that in the morning and I drink it and I don't have that need to put something down my throat because I'm already putting something good in and it satisfies me.
75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients. It has everything in one thing. You take one scoop, you put it in the bottle, you shake it up, and you're good to go.
I remember the first time I saw someone drinking a green drink, and I thought, that's the last thing I'm going to do. But when I started drinking, and I started drinking probably 15 years ago, and I love the green. And now that I've had AG1, it's the best I've ever had.
And Athletic Greens is going to do something special for Trail Runner Nation members. You can get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase if you visit athleticgreens.com/TRN today.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman.
I'm Andy Jones Wilkins.
And my name is Scott War. And this is our first attempt at doing a live recording, which I don't understand. It's not redundant. They're opposites of each other. A live recording.
There's a term for that.
Help me out, headmaster.
It's an oxymoron.
Now that you've heard how smart Andy Jones Wilkins is, I think it's probably a good idea. Those who are listening to the podcast or those who are in the audience who don't know Andy Jones Wilkins is a headmaster at a school. He's also a very experienced runner, run Western States many, many, many times, and at 1 year finished second. But Andy also coaches at Carmichael Training. If you want to hire him as a coach, he is available and can really drop these knowledge bombs on you whenever you need them.
Well, thank you. And yes, I did finish second a long, long time ago at Western States. It was not nearly as a competitive race back then as it is now.
He also is a weekly contributor at I Run Far in the Tap Room. It's been going on 11 years now. You do a weekly article at I Run Far. You serve up fine connoisseur beers. I want to know, what kind of beer are you drinking tonight? It's getting late on the East Coast right now. What are you drinking?
I have a nice Pennsylvania IPA from Rusty Rail Brewing called the Fog Monster. It's delightful, actually. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, why did you pick that particular beer, AJW? Because you don't just haphazardly reach into a cooler and draw a beer, there's usually something behind it. What inspired you to pick this beer tonight?
So I have a column due for I Run Far on Friday.
Yeah.
And for those of you who have read the column this year, I've done a year-long series called Trail Love Letters, where I've showcased one trail in the country among my favorite trails: the Western States Trail, a section of Hard Rock, a section of the Continental Divide Trail. I did a section of the Grindstone Course, and this one for the November, I'm showcasing perhaps one of the most well-known trails in the entire country, the Dipsy Trail. And there's so much to say about the Dipsy Trail, but one of my fondest memories of the Dipsy Trail is running from the fog into the sun. And as I was struggling this afternoon with trying to put a couple sentences together to write this column about the Dipsy Trail, I went to the beer cooler and I saw, fog monster. That's what I need to inspire get over my writer's block to write about the Dipsy Trail. I did run the Quad Dipsy, which is every Thanksgiving weekend in the Bay Area. I did run it 5 times when I lived out there, and it's a race that's always going to be close to my heart. So hopefully the mixture of this podcast as well as this fog monster will inspire me to get the column done, because I'm already past deadline. It's usually due on Wednesday night, and because it publishes on Friday. So I'm sure while we're on this podcast, I'm going to get a nasty email from my editor saying, where's the article?
Your editor's in the audience right now. Andy and Don and I came with some questions for each other, just in case we had a slow start. I'll go first. Hey, Andy, I wanted to know, I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but there's a lot of walking that is done in ultra running, right? When you're out there for a 50K, a 50 mile, there's walking, especially when there's a lot of hills. How much should we be training with walking? You're a coach, right? Should we be walking in our training?
Well, I think there are a lot of runners who think walking is their rest time. And I think a lot of that is because when they're training, all they do is run. So I would say absolutely, you want to train yourself to be able to walk. You want to understand what your walking pace on a typical, slight incline is. And you definitely want to practice sort of deliberate, mindful, purposeful walking. I remember talking to Ian Sharman about this years ago. He was a notoriously fast walker at Western States, where he would literally pass people on the climbs while they were running and he was walking. And I asked him, how do you teach yourself to walk so fast? He just said, well, you know what? I practice walking a lot. And so I think it's totally different muscles. It's a totally different mindset. But most of all, you have to get out of the mindset of thinking I'm walking so I'm resting. Rather, you're walking because you're proceeding over the land just a little bit slower than you're running, but you're using different muscles. You're catching your breath, and you're going to be ready the next time you have to run again.
I love that. AJW, you've got to practice what you're going to do. And there's no doubt there's a percentage of every long race or the terrain that demands walking. So why not practice it? If you go in and just run everything in training, what about your fast, efficient hiking? And that's what you have to learn to do, is become a fast, efficient mover. And sometimes it's done with fast hiking. So I think you're right. You have to.
Andy, help me with the specifics here. How do you incorporate walking in your training schedule? Do you say, hey, it's Thursday tomorrow, I'm going to go out and do a fast hike? Or do you go out and say, I'm going to do a normal run, but during this run, I'm going to, do 5 minutes or 10 minutes of walking?
Neither of those, Scott, not surprisingly, that both of those are wrong. typically, I would say, maybe it's your Thursday run. You're only going to walk. And I might then encourage someone to pick a really difficult course, or maybe it's inclement weather and they get on a treadmill and like crank it up to 15% grade and put it on 3 miles an hour and go for an hour, and just hike uphill for an hour. on a random Thursday. I think the other way and the more efficient way and better way to integrate running, walking into your runs is on your long runs. And literally find a course, you know, that's good. You know, you're going to a 5 or 6 or 8 hour run. You know, it's going to have some uphills on it. And you deliberately walk those. And you walk those right from the beginning, you know, with purpose and with focus. And in the course of, you know, that 6 to 8 hour run, you might walk for an accumulated hour of that. And so I would say a deliberate sort of midweek walk only workout mixed in with your other running workouts, and then mixing walking into your long runs. I think it's most important in that context, though, to be picking a long run course that more or less mirrors or mimics what you're going to be racing on. So if you're racing a relatively flat course like Javelina or Rocky Raccoon, you're not going to walk very much. Maybe your walks are going to be really brief and short, but there might be a lot of them, versus something like Western States or Hard Rock, where you'll have long, extended walks peppered in with, you know, relatively easy jogs on the flats and then faster runs on the downhills. So I think it's important to choose your courses when you're going to do that as well.
Excellent.
Oh, do we have any questions? Go ahead, Scott.
Henry asked one that I think is hilarious. Here's the question. I've heard Andy on several podcasts. Andy, what brings you back to TRN on a regular basis? What makes TRN special?
Are you sure you didn't ask that, Scott? Okay, go ahead. What makes us so special, AJW?
You know, you guys have always been about the community, you know, Trail Runner Nation. I remember, I've told the story now many times on this podcast, Don, when you tracked me down at the Western States Lottery back in, I think it was 2009 or 2010, and said, I have this great idea for a podcast. We'd love to have you on, and we're going to call it Trail Runner Nation. And I just love the idea of a nation, of something we all have in common, no matter how fast or slow we are, no matter how old or young we are, no matter how cool we think we are. And the fact that I've been on, you know, probably, I don't know, one podcast a month, more or less, for the last 7-8 years has really been fun for me. And it allows me, to Henry's question, it allows me to have relationships with the audience that are similar to the relationships that I have with the audience on I Run Far. And so when I go to races, when I'm out in the world and people say, oh, I've heard you on Trail Runner Nation, you know, Scott's really weird and Don seems odd, but it's so great when you're on, because you give some sense of normalcy to the podcast. But I, in all seriousness, I do love the fact that we have this continuity, and, you know, podcasts have come and gone over the last, especially the last 3-4 years. And you guys have been, you know, consistent every Friday for going on 11 years. And that's something that I take inspiration from. So I keep coming back, Henry, because first of all, you know, Don and Scott are some of my best friends. You know, we've spent not a lot of people know this. We have not spent a whole lot of time together, like in person.
Right.
We've spent, you know, from time to time together in person, but most of our relationship over the past 11 years has been forged, you know, on this podcast. And it's a really meaningful relationship to me and I perhaps even to them.
This is the second part of Henry's question. He said, for you, Don, and myself, what traits do you see in Andy that you continually invite him back? Why do we invite Andy back? Besides the bromance, and it's the only time that I could actually talk to an elite runner, I would say. He says yes when we ask him.
There's that. And there's also what we started with TRN. We said, you know, we should do a podcast for the folks that aren't in our area with a bunch of just ultra runners that can ask questions, and we can start a podcast and ask these questions to people so others can join in. And AJW is one of those people that you would hope to run with locally, that you could say, do we run this hill? What do you do when you cramp? What do you do before race night? These are the questions that you would want to ask somebody like AJW. And fortunately, he joins us. He answers them, and he has patience with those same ridiculous questions over and over, and we're just very grateful for him. So bromance, probably. But AJW, you did not tell the whole story, and you know what I'm talking about, so we're You're smiling because I know you know. So we're at the lottery at Western States. And I go, hey, tapped him on his shoulder. AJW, AJW. That's me meekly asking, would you like to do a podcast? And what was your response, AJW? Truthfully, what did you say?
I turned to you and said, who are you?
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's my favorite
part. I think that's exactly what I did.
Yes, you did. But it didn't stop me. I just told you who I was and we moved on.
And then I think a year or so later, we went on a training run. Well, at least we started a training run together.
Yes. You left me as soon as a downhill happened on that particular run. And I learned what an elite athlete is. And I kept up for the first 6 miles and I really felt proud of myself. And then all of a sudden, the technical came and I learned why he was second place in 2005.
I will say, too, I want to say something that the listeners might be interested in. When we, especially over the last 5 years or so, when we come up with topics for the podcasts, it's typically like a one-sentence text from one of us to the other two, yeah. Maybe with a link to a book or a link to an article or a link to something we heard someone say. Or wouldn't it be interesting to talk about patience this week? And then we typically riff off that through text for about a day. And then next thing you know, we schedule the podcast and we're off to the races. So it's really organic. It's not like Scott has some big editorial calendar on his wall that says, you know, every fourth Friday, there's going to be a podcast about this book review or something. But it just seems to work out in a really organic way, much in the same way conversations evolve when you're out on a long run with your buddies on the trail.
Yeah, we trust one another to have something interesting to say, and we go in with complete confidence and security that, hey, something good is going to happen if we join for an hour and we just talk.
Thank you, Henry. That was those were some really good questions. Ryan, do you have another one picked out?
Yeah, this is from Brian Lambert. Does AJW plan on doing a 200 miler?
Ooh,
that's a good question, Brian. You know, I've flirted with it for the last couple of years. Don and Scott know this. We talked about the Tahoe 200 a couple of years ago when I was entered and then got injured and wasn't able to run. But yes, I do. I have my eyes on Bigfoot in the Pacific Northwest because it's a good time of year for me being an educator, and Cocodona 250 because I used to live in Arizona and I love that country. So I don't know how soon it will be, but I do think it's time to make the plunge into that far-flung, sleep-deprived craziness of, I mean, just seeing some of those hour figures, you know, like 108 hours. I had an athlete I coached who ran the Bigfoot 200 in August. And, you know, I woke up on Thursday and tuned in to him, you know, on the race tracking, and then again on Friday, and then again on Saturday, and then again on, and Shelley, my wife, said, is Ken still running? So there's something that absolutely fascinates me about it, and I think it's time for me to take that plunge. So anybody out there listening who has some advice when the time comes, particularly around sleep and gear and all of that stuff. Seems like it's a gearhead's dream, those races, because they've got to have so much. Like, I mean, I barely have a watch that lasts 12 hours.
That's because you finish most of your races in 12 hours, even if they're 100 miles. You know, the crazy thing about the 200 that makes it so appealing is that what's your fastest 100-mile finish, AJW?
Just under 15 hours years ago. Yeah. Yeah.
And 108, you stated a time of 108 hours. And you know what?
Hey, wait, time out. Whose phone is that? Is that yours, Freeman?
You know, it was unintentional. It was my Tile that I squeezed in my pocket and then rang that. Okay.
You know, if you did that at my school, I would take your phone away and you'd have to have your mom come and pick it up.
would you spank me?
No.
Okay. Hey, so 108 hours is a respectable time in a 200-mile run. So hats off to Steve that did it in 108. But you did 100 miles in 15 hours. It's crazy to think the time is extended that much for an extra 100 miles. And it really is very inviting for all of us that think, you know what, maybe I can do a 200. Yes, you can, because there's a different amount of time that you have to complete it. And yes, do it. It's doable.
So Brian asked that question, and he just texted in the chat that he's running Bigfoot next year, Andy. So you may be needed to connect with Brian. Brian, let us know if you have run a 200 before. Maybe Andy needs to get some tips from you. Karen also put in the chat that she was at Bigfoot this past August, and she DQ'd at 180 miles.
Oh,
Brian says he's only done 100 miles, so he hasn't done the 200. It's a new venture. But Karen, I want to know why you DQ'd. What did you do to get DQ'd?
Well, she ran 180 miles.
Yeah, that'll do it. Well played, Ryan. Well played. Do we have any other questions out there, Ryan?
We have a question from Sydney, who says they are not a runner, but would like to know if carb loading pre-race is effective or just a myth.
AJW, you're our expert on all things racing. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know if it's a myth, but I think it all depends on what your sort of diet is in your normal life. I'm a strong believer in don't mess up your diet too much in the days before a race. So if you normally eat a high carb diet, then eat a high carb diet in the lead up to the race. If you normally eat a more balanced diet or a high protein diet, then do the same. I think carb loading is a little bit old school, maybe even more old school than I am. I mean, certainly in the hours before a race, it's nice to top off your glycogen stores, which is basically what carb loading does. It tops off your body with glycogen so that, you know, maybe you can go a few hours before you have to start popping a gel or taking sugar or things like that. But, you know, in the kind of races we do, like we're just talking about 200 milers, you know, there's not a whole lot of need to load up in the 24, 48, 72 hours before a race to end up, you know, surviving it. I think a lot more has to do with your nutrition in a week and even a month before the event.
I agree. I think that's a good answer. And, you know, I'm going to plug one of our sponsors, UCAN. I think if you end up with a good nutritional product that you can feed yourself through the run and produce safe, sustainable energy, great deal. I mean, that's the piece. You just want to be able to have energy on demand that doesn't spike, that keeps you on the even. And I think they can do something. I think whether a sponsor or not, I think that's just good math. And I think we should look at doing it for long, long runs.
I think you don't want to try something new on race day or race evening. You know, most of my training is in the morning, and I usually don't eat breakfast. So why would I want to eat a big breakfast before a big race? I mean, that's all you want to do is mess that whole timing thing up. Ryan, do we have another question?
Yeah, we have a question from Mark in the chat for AJW. What happened at Javelina after your fun interview with Shelby? It looked like you were going to have a great race.
Yeah. What happened?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't able to actually travel out there. It's actually a really unfortunate story. You can read all about it in last week's AJW's Taproom, but just real briefly, on the Wednesday morning before I was scheduled to fly out Friday morning, on the Wednesday morning before the race, I found out that one of our teachers at my school had a really, really bad case of COVID. And it was a teacher that had actually had exposure to about 45 students in the school on Monday and Tuesday, and all of the staff. And so I was really, really worried about a potential outbreak at the school, and certainly was not feeling comfortable myself getting on an airplane. For one, but second, actually, I wasn't comfortable either, you know, leaving my school community in that context. It just felt like it would be a bad look if, you know, it was Saturday and things were going awry at my school and they were like, "Where's Andy?" And someone had to say, "He's out in Arizona running a race." Mm-hmm. It just felt to me like something I shouldn't do. So fortunately, I was able to, you know, cancel my my travel plans. And, you know, I got in touch with Craig, my pacer, and a couple of my other friends, the friend who was going to pick me up at the airport, and everybody understood. But I mean, it was kind of a cautionary tale of life during COVID. Literally on Tuesday night, I was packing my camping gear. I was out in my garage. I was going through everything to go to Javelina. I mean, I used to live in Arizona. I'd been in touch with my Arizona friends. And by Wednesday night, it was like, I'm hunkering down and staying here, scheduling my own PCR test for COVID. Fortunately, it came back negative, and I just had to make that decision. So I've got a fair bit of fitness that I'm sitting on right now. I'm not exactly sure what to do with it. And I have to go back to Javelina, as you probably, if you listen to that interview with Shelby, I ran the race back in 2007 and was really excited to be coming back after 14 years. So I guess next year it'll be, 15 years after I first ran it. But that's the story. It was really a unfortunate kind of turn of events, and I feel terrible about it, but I felt like it was the thing I had to do. And I had to kind of decide right away. Like, it wasn't really, I didn't really mull over it at all. It was like, COVID in my school, I got to stay here.
AJW, you've already won the confidence of the chat room. I mean, Scott says, Andy, you're a considerate man. Mark says, well done, AJW. Sorry you missed the race. Karen says, understandable. I hope your staff recovers safely.
Sympathy. The audience has sympathy for Andy.
But not with me, pal, because I've got to say, you can't use that excuse again. I mean, valid, right? Good one, but not next year. You've got to run it. That's the way it has to go.
Actually, going back to the question about running a 200, you know, it was, I did reach out to Jamil, you know, who's the president of AeroViper Running, and I had, you know, told him, you know, kind of during the race, actually, that I wasn't there because he was so busy. You know, I made a little comment on the chat during the live feed, and he was like, holy crap, why is AJW chatting on the chat? He's supposed to be running the race. And I kind of had to tell him, I'm still in Pennsylvania, dude. But he said, hey, you should come to Cocodona, make up for it, you know? So that was a little bit the part of what inspired it. It was like, why wait a whole year to go run in Arizona? I could just run in Arizona in May at Cocodona 250.
Hey, Andy, can you plug the podcast that you did? Where can we find that podcast?
The podcast, so AeroViper Running, the Javelina 100, they did a series of podcasts leading up to the race. They interviewed people who kind of went back in history, you know, the early years of the race before Jamil took it over in 2009. And, you know, since I lived in Phoenix in the late 90s, there were a lot of like the old school desert dog runners. Like, there were not as many trails then, there weren't as many races. And so Shelby was interested in interviewing me and kind of hearing about kind of the old days of Arizona ultra running. So it was a fun podcast to do. She was a great host, and you can find it on the AeroViper Running podcast channel on YouTube. It was a lot of fun to do.
Scott, can we link that in the show notes?
What are show notes? Yeah, of course we can.
I love doing that. And everybody knows it that's listening. I love to make those assignments on air to Scott. So thank you for letting me do that, AJW.
We're going to take a short break from our live recording of Trail Runner Nation to tell you about Open. Open is a mindfulness studio designed a new way for you to practice your well-being.
I've always wanted to meditate, Scott, but I didn't know how to do it, where to turn to get the right instruction, but now I do with the Open Mindfulness Studio.
They have live classes with top instructors, or if you have a crazy schedule, you can access all these classes on demand 24/7.
What makes Open different? It's the teachers, it's the music they use, but most importantly, their community. They have community of people getting together, doing this, and supporting one another. And we're hip to that, Scott. That's how we do trail running.
They have a library of meditation, breath work, yoga, Pilates. And here's the deal. Open is giving everyone on Trail Runner Nation a 30-day trial. Why wouldn't you take advantage of this? If you go to open-together.com/TRN and use the code TRN when you sign up, you'll get that 30-day free. Give it a try. We've talked about how important the mind is in trail and ultra running. Here's your opportunity.
All right, this question comes from Amos in Redwood City, California. Heading into the winter months, what suggestions do you have for running on trails that are muddy or slippery? Is there any way to maintain some level of speed?
Go ahead, Don.
Oh,
you're running in the over on the west coast of California, where it's a little muddy and wet all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, we just had 5 inches of rain, which was a century long record. So I would say what you have to do with technical terrain or slippery terrain is you have to run without fear. Because if you're fearful, you're going to probably crash. So you just have confidence and you just have to go and you just have to rely that you can handle anything that comes forward and comes at you. So I would say be fearless and just go for it and handle problems as they come.
Do you want to know what mine are? My answer to that is, Don?
And
you'll love this because I've used this quite a bit.
Yeah.
The gyroscope theory.
Oh, tell us that, Scott. I haven't heard that before.
The gyroscope theory is... and I learned this because I used to dabble a little bit in snow skiing.
In skiing, right? Yeah, go ahead.
And in snow skiing, it's an exercise of continual recovery. You're never in balance completely because if you're in balance, you're not moving. And skiing is a dynamic moving sport. So if you're running down the hill, especially running down the hill and the terrain is sketchy, whether it's muddy or wet. If you think about always moving, so if you slip, don't freeze, don't tighten up your muscles and try to resist that slide, move with it. Think about where you're going and not where you are. And if you do that, the likelihood of you going down on your keister is reduced.
And let's not forget the trekking pole, the third point of contact. As you're cruising down that hill in total chaos, you've got that extra point that you can just reach out and just push off. You know when you're about to fall and you realize at that very moment, and your brain works very well at that moment, you go, ooh, I just need a couple second or just a moment more to fix this. That pole gives you that extra moment, that extra push, that just extra catch so you can get that other foot where it wants to go. Poles are good. And we used to think of poles, at least I did, as something that people needed when they moved on to a point where they needed poles.
You thought they were crutches, Freeman, because you're a chiropractor. You gave out crutches to people and you thought the poles were crutches.
Well, I mean, if you want to put words in my mouth, that's fair. And I probably said that. And so I think poles are just fantastic. In fact, I ran my first 200 with poles, and I felt I had an unfair advantage because I was running 200, which I'd never ran before, but I had four limbs to run it. And that gave me the confidence to say, you know what? I can run 100 on two legs. I can run 200 on four limbs. And that's how I entered it. And it really is true. There's a big, big advantages to poles.
Hey, I gotta say, I'm impressed, you guys. You know, because 15 years ago when I lived in the Bay Area, when it rained, no one went running.
Really?
They just stayed at home. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you guys have upgraded the Bay Area gene by just going out there and running at all in the rain. But I would agree. I would agree with what I would. I think I would stop short of Don's be fearless.
that's to your detriment, AJW. That's your problem, not the information's problem. Go ahead.
Okay. I'd say that you just want to make you can also choose your trails wisely. I mean, if you are in the Bay Area or down in LA or even up in Seattle and Portland and you know, in places in the Mountain West, there's so many different kinds of dirt and soil and the way the trails drain or don't drain. I would say before you figure out how to run in the mud, figure out how to find trails that get less muddy. And, you know, I think most areas, even where I live here in the East, there's like the shoe sucking mud, but then there's also the mud that you can kind of, you know, get over without too much trouble that a lug holds on to and stuff. So I'd say every bit as important as trying to find good technique for running in the mud is trying to figure out a way to avoid the mud.
Hey, I'm watching the chat and Karen says, Don, reckless abandon. on the downhills, that's where the party starts. Karen, if you want to go for a run this Saturday, I'm game because I like your style. Go ahead, Scott.
No, I was going to ask. I think Karen just called you out, Freeman. I didn't catch the reckless abandon comment. I must have been falling asleep.
I like Karen. We got to get Karen on the show sometime.
Well, Karen, just push the red blue button, join the chat, and let's get this party started.
Katie makes a good point. She just joined in and she said, don't forget to get good trail shoes with some good lugs. Mm-hmm. Traction helps on muddy trails. Good point, Katie. That's probably the obvious answer. Katie, we typically don't look at the obvious. We kind of go around the hill. We tap dance around the obvious, and we appreciate that comment. What's next, Ryan?
Karen owns the show. I mean, she's got more stuff coming. You know, at our desperation, why don't we just invite her to do an episode? I mean...
We do have a question from Karen in the chat. It's a question for AJW. What is your opinion on running two 100-mile races a month apart?
Ooh!
Could I make the September Pacific Northwest race my A race and then do another in Javelina as a B race? How would you set up the training for this?
AJW, I'm going to just jump in and then you give the real answer. Gives you time to think about it. Karen, absolutely. I mean, you can do either one and do them both as A races. Why do a B race? Just do them. Okay, AJW?
I would say that you want to think of it with events those close together, you want to try to almost think of it as one event. I've coached a lot of runners, for example, to run the Grand Slam, which is 400 milers over 11 weeks. Or in recent years, I've coached probably half a dozen runners who do the what they call the Triple Crown of 200s, and they're a month apart. And it's in your mind, it's better to think of them as one event, almost like in your case, doing a 200 and then 100 a couple months later, think of it as like a two-stage race. You don't really have enough time to recover and then train back up between the two events. So you basically want to recover and maintain after the first one. And you're going to have so much training on your legs by the time you get to the second one that you're going to be fine. I think the one thing I would say is it would make sense to have a brief and very steep taper before the first event, maybe as short as like 4 or 5 days before the first event, so that you don't run the risk of losing any fitness as you're recovering from that first event and ramping up to the second one. So I talk to athletes about this all the time, about, you know, how close together should events be? How far apart can they be? When do you run the risk of losing fitness versus gaining recovery? I think that the sort of sweet spot there is about 4 to 6 weeks, where you really start to lose fitness from a big kind of big stimulus effort. You certainly, if you get around to 8 weeks, you're starting back up again. So I would think about that. I would map out the calendar, and I would certainly think about front loading the training so that most of your high volume is done by the time you get to like late July going into that, that two race series.
Or just wing it. Don's philosophy is just to wing it.
Think of it as one race with a month rest in between the miles.
Hey, we have our first brave soul that wants to join us.
All right, we got Henry. He wants to come on and ask a question about nutrition.
Oh, Henry, you're going to go down in TRN history. Welcome.
Most literature seems to indicate that you should be taking about 200 calories per hour when you run. If I'm running at a 15-minute pace and an elite runner is running at a 10-minute pace, our calorie consumption would be quite different. Why would our calorie intake be the same at 200 calories per hour?
Oh, good. That's a great question. I'll take first stab at that, AJW, and then you can clean it up. I think the 200 or 300 calorie per hour is more of a measure of what the body can consume, not what you actually use. I think we actually use 700 to 800 calories or so per hour, maybe more, to run and sustain that runnable. And, you know, so I think it's more of what can we physically process as a human body is where that number comes from. AJW?
Well, I'm going to say actually that Henry could get away with taking in fewer calories. I think one of the things we see, one of the interesting phenomenon we see with 200 milers, for example, is way less GI distress. You don't see people off on the side of the trail puking all the time like you see in shorter distance races. And I think part of it is it's more of a slow drip caloric intake. So Henry might not need to take 200 to 300 an hour. He might benefit from, you know, 100 an hour, say a gel every hour, going 15-minute pace, maybe at a solid hike, and then stopping at an aid station and having a, you know, a 600 or 700 calorie small meal. You know, it's almost akin to what many of us do when we go backpacking, right? We go backpacking and we take, you know, trail mix or little snacks and dried fruit and so forth. And then we stop after 4 hours and sit on a rock and eat a big old sandwich or something like that. So I think that there is some truth to the fact that if you're not burning calories at a steady rate, a steady high rate, like someone who might be running 10-minute miles, you may not need to consume calories at quite the pace that someone else would.
And I would also say it's an experiment of one. We've repeated that again and again and again. I think that's why training is important. You need to know how much and what you can ingest. You know, sometimes I feel like I cannot ingest 200 calories an hour. And sometimes I have to slow it down. That's one of the nice things about back to UCAN is those liquid calories are sometimes a lot easier to ingest and to get those calories in and make them last longer so you don't have the peaks and the valleys.
Nice, gentlemen. Ryan, what else do we have?
Oh, we have Brian Lambert who'd like to join in and just say a few things to us.
Hey, well, we'll never say no to that.
All right, Brian, you're on.
Right on, Brian. Hey.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for being brave.
It does take a certain amount of bravery. I just wanted to say, I did a 100 miler, I don't know, about 10 years ago. And I started listening to TRN, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, something like that. And it's a great show, you know, obviously. But in listening to it, at one point you brought Candace Burt in.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And she started talking about her crazy 200 milers. And it's your fault.
Oh, Brian, I'm sorry that happened to you.
It's your fault. I'm doing Bigfoot next. It's delayed, actually. I signed up for Tahoe in 2020, but, you know, things happened.
Yeah.
And now I'm going into Bigfoot in 2022, and it's all your fault.
How are you training, Brian? How are you training for this 200 miler that's different than training for a 100 miler? Do you have a strategy there?
Well, actually, I hired Chrissy Moyle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you guys know her super yes. well. She's uh-huh. she's amazing. So she helped me out on some races the last couple of years. And we're going to roll up our sleeves. I live in Montreal, Canada. So for the next few months, there's no running. I mean, no trail running.
Uh-huh.
It's skiing time, Scott.
Yeah. Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome. And so but we're going to restart in March, and she's going to tell me what to do.
Do you think that skiing, when you say skiing, are you talking cross-country touring, or are you talking downhill?
Well, both, but the cross-country is, you know, what gets you, you know, what gives you the benefit, right?
Hey, do you think that's better training than actually going out and running? And Andy knows this because he's also a cross-country skier too, right, Andy? I'd mm-hmm. like to know if you think that is a better training vehicle than maybe just going out and running.
I don't think it's better, but it's what we got in the winter here, right?
Take what you can get.
Yeah.
What I'll say about cross-country skiing, at least in my case, is if you really suck at it, it's a really good workout because you use so many parts of your body that you don't use very much. And it's akin to swimming, right? I mean, I've been some of the most embarrassed and humiliated moments of my athletic life have been either in the pool or on a cross-country course, skiing course. And yet I feel like after 20 minutes, I'm exhausted and I need to eat a cheeseburger and two orders of fries because, you know, my body's flailed around and, you know, and I've made it, you know, 4K. So I do think absolutely. And of course, we know that cross-country skiers are some of the biggest cardio monsters in the world, highest VO2 maxes, highest capacity for training. I mean, you've got some of these Norwegian Nordic skiers who can do 11, 1200 hours of training a year. You know, it's limited impact on the joints and so forth. So, I mean, I do think there's a secret there with cross-country skiing. What we haven't seen yet, you know, we've seen people transition from cross-country skiing to shorter events. I mean, that race up in Alaska, you know, the one where they run up the mountain and run back down on 4th of July, that's always won by a cross-country skier, cardio monsters. We haven't quite seen them, except for a few. You know, Courtney DeWalter was a longtime cross-country skier. Corinne Malcolm was a cross-country skier. Scott Jurek even was a cross-country skier back in the day when he lived in Minnesota. But we haven't quite seen like the world-class cross-country skier become the world-class ultra runner. And I think it's probably coming.
Yeah, AJW, you dropped some big names there, and you kind of defeated your own argument by dropping those names. There's also, Killian?
No. But the point is, they were not world-class cross-country skiers.
Okay.
They were good cross-country skiers. I'm talking about
college good.
Yeah, I'm talking about like the Norwegian guys or the Olympians. You know, like if Jesse Diggins or Keegan Randall, who won the gold medal at the last Olympics in the women's sprint relay, if they transitioned to ultras, you know, how would they do? Morgan Arotola is a good example. She was an Olympian in 2012, and she's transitioned really well to like hill climbing and half marathons and stuff like that, but hasn't quite made it to the 50K and 50 mile stuff. I mean, Stephanie Howe's another one. I mean, she was a college cross country skier. So I haven't really defeated the argument. I've just said that, you know, I think translating one to the other is tricky.
Nice, AJW. Ryan, any chance we can edit out my comment and get rid of that?
Well, and I want to clarify, Don, you were going to say Killian Jornet, but Killian is not a cross-country skier. He's a ski mountaineering, which is different. He's skinning, they call it skinning up the mountain and then skiing down the mountain. Cross-country is touring or on a track.
So sometimes I ask the question that somebody in the audience is thinking at the risk of being vulnerable. And I did that for the rest of those that are thinking like me. So,
and then I rip you a new one. Sorry, hey, Don.
No, that's okay. I mean, bruises heal, so we're all right.
We have a little nugget of wisdom coming from Katie in the chat.
Yes, Katie.
She says her husband always tells her, it only sucks when you suck. When you don't suck anymore, it won't suck either.
Oh.
I may have to put that on a quilt, Katie. I needed to crochet that somewhere.
Let me try to help shed a little more light on it. You know, ultra running is hard, but when things are going right, it's not quite as hard. And when you're not doing like you wanted to, it just embellishes the hard. Get your quilt, and by the time it takes you to quilt it, you'll get it.
Okay. Thank you, Katie. Any other questions we have, Ryan?
Yeah, we do have a question coming from Sydney in the chat. They would like to know if you guys have any favorite trails.
Oh.
Hometown trails or anywhere that you'd make a special visit to.
Ah. What's your favorite trail where you are now in Pennsylvania, AJW? I follow you on Strava, and anybody who wants to follow him on Strava, he loves the attention.
You know, there's a great trail not far from where I live called the Loyal Sock Trail. I think it's about a 74-mile point-to-point trail, but it, you know, traverses a lot of the kind of gnarly Pennsylvania rocky terrain that this part of the country is famous for. You know, I love the Appalachian Trail, especially the section that runs through Shenandoah National Park down in Virginia, where I used to live. But I mean, I've got to just say my absolute favorite section of trail in the entire world is from the Pump, or it's about a mile from Devil's Thumb on the Western States course. It's the Deadwood Pump, as it's known locally, down to the bottom of El Dorado Canyon. It's one of the sweetest 5 mile downhills. It goes right by, Scott, one of your favorite places, the Deadwood Cemetery. That's where it kind of transitions from kind of double track or wider single track to narrow, steep single track. And then it just is this beautiful descent. You can hear the river from miles away. And then you go by 14-minute tree, and it gets steeper after 14-minute tree. And then you get down and you cross the bridge, and you have a 2.5 mile climb up to Michigan Bluff that is not that hard. And the best part about the climb up is it's the steepest at the bottom. So if you can get through the first 10 minutes of that climb, you're even going to be able to run some parts of it up to Michigan Bluff. So
Andy, it is a hard climb. Maybe it's not hard for you. I've done that climb many times and it's hard.
AJW, you're talking about the Western States Trail, right? And you didn't allude to that in the beginning. Which miles are you talking about? The Pump? Yeah. Is it which mile?
From mile 48 to 55. So from mile, Devil's Thumb is at mile 47, and there it's a kind of a gentle rolling mile from 47 to 48 where the Pump is. But from the Pump, which is roughly 48, to mile 55, which is where Michigan Bluff. If you can go to the Western States Trail and run one section of trail, you should run that section. You'll experience everything about the race in that one section. You'll smell the manzanita. You'll hear the raging river at the bottom. You'll experience steep switchbacks and dusty trail, steep climbs, wide open vistas. It's incredible. It's an incredible place. I mean, maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but I'd like to have my ashes spread there on that section of trail.
Oh, we can arrange that. No problem. Hey, and if I take a stab at that, I would say probably the best trail is the one with the best memories, with the best friends. When you look back in time and you said, I just felt so good. I was in great shape. I loved my people that I was with. That's our best trail. And whether it's in Pennsylvania or Western States Trail or Colorado or wherever your location is, that's the best trail. And that's what's great about our sport. We can all have a best trail.
And isn't that one of the fun things about going back to those trails? I mean, going back, recently started running just out of boredom some of the trails that I first started running when I started running. And I have such good memories. I turn a corner and I go, I remember what we were talking about right here with our buddy mm-hmm. Jeff. I remember this is where he told me this. Or I'll turn another corner and I'll go, that's where that tree was blown over. And then turn another corner and go, that's where we saw the freshly killed deer. That's the beauty of it. And I think you're right. I don't know whether I could pick a favorite trail.
And it doesn't matter what pace you're going, it can still feel good.
I think walking pace is good.
Well, you know, that's the new normal.
Yeah. All right, guys. We have one more guest coming on. Karen is going to come onto the show and ask a few questions.
Here comes Karen. Hey, Karen.
Oh, Karen.
Oh, hey, Karen. Hey. All right. She's live.
Karen, I think I've run with you.
No, I saw you guys at the trail running camp when Maggie and Courtney were there.
Oh, yeah. Up in Forest Hill.
Chicken Hawk, some crazy place out there. It was a lot of fun that night.
Yes. My question is, what do you guys do for cross training?
We're doing it. We don't have time for any cross training, Karen.
Oh, but I can answer that. Like AJW said,
You
know, doing something different that puts a demand on the body, and I'm referring to swimming at this point for me, putting a demand on the body and being easy on the joints. So I can still run the motor, run cardiovascular, but not put a demand on the weight-bearing structures, feet, knees, hips. And I think that's when I really took it to the next level of cardiovascular, when I got in the pool. Now, like AJW said, I am not an efficient swimmer. And I remember the swimming coach came over and said, hey, you want some help? And I thought, no, not really, because I'm just trying to get in better cardiovascular shape. I know I'm a barge. I don't need to be a sleek machine. I just need to work my heart. But I think there's great advantages to it. And I think it's finding something, whether it's a bike or whether it's rollerblading or whether it's the pool or maybe it's yoga for stretching, just something that helps you become better at what you love, which is trail running. And so that's my answer.
Karen, these guys know this from a podcast we did years ago, but when I was recovering from my first hip surgery, I discovered the Stairmaster. And I still use I'm in a Stairmaster segment right now because it's kind of my reset time. After I bailed on Javelina, I was like, okay, I'm just going to reset. And the thing about the Stairmaster is you can hit it hard. It's not an easy piece of equipment to manage. That's why I think a lot of people don't get on it very much, and they'd much rather, you know, get on the treadmill or elliptical or something like that. But I find that I can, in 30 minutes on the Stairmaster, I can work my quads, my glutes, my hamstrings, mm-hmm. even my core a little bit, depending on how fast I make it run and so forth. So while I don't spend a lot of time in the gym, I do think that Stairmaster is a really good piece of equipment if you have to go to the gym. I would also say too, and I'm 54 years old, and I do need to work on a lot of mobility. And so doing a lot of like body weight strength training and just mobility, you know, kind of a series of exercises to move my, especially my joints, hips, knees, even ankles, you know, through range of motion exercises. I was joking with someone earlier today that, you know, you've gotten to a certain age in your life when your pre-warm-up routine takes as long as your run does. You know, I do have a hip routine that I have to kind of for physical therapy that I have to go through to kind of activate my hips before I start running. And so if I'm in a down season like now, literally that will take 40 minutes and then I'll put my shoes on and I'll go for a 40-minute run and that'll be it.
I have 2 points to make to you, Karen, and then I want to find out what you do for your cross training. But here's 2 things that I realized with cross training. One, make it something that you enjoy and you have fun. Pickleball is one thing that I do. I know that Mike Wardian plays pickleball quite a bit. I think he is actually pretty good and enters in tournaments. But there's some quick movements. There's some side-to-side movements, and it's a good cross-training. The other thing that I've learned recently is don't make it too overwhelming or difficult. The cross-training can be very, very short duration, and I'll direct you, if you just go to YouTube and Google David Roche's name and mountain climbers, he shows a routine on some stairs that takes less than 5 minutes. And it's just a great way to build up your leg muscles. So don't think that you need to every other day go to the gym and work out for an hour and a half. Do something very simple and make it, you know, the whole idea is one is greater than none, right? If you do 10 push-ups or if you do 10 sit-ups, that's better than nothing.
And before we find out what Karen loves to do, a call out to my Marine Corps Marines out there, mountain climbers has a different meaning to us. Okay, go ahead, Karen.
I just started, you know, doing some road biking. So that's, I have an indoor bike, but I find it really boring. So I just bought, a used bike and I just went outside and just do my biking out there.
I was going to say, a good friend of ours, Lee McKinley, started riding his bike more than he ran because of the low impact. As he was getting a little bit older, he could get out on his bike and he trained harder and more hours on his bike than he did running and was able to lower his finish times at some of the local races here.
I've had this thought. I said, if I had to race Lance Armstrong on a bike and I had the most elite bike, what would he have to ride to make it a fair race? And I thought he'd have to ride some very heavy, archaic bike with no air in the tires. and, you know, rusted chain. I just try to describe what would it take for me to race Lance Armstrong. So a mental exercise that probably only entertained me. But there might be, if Lance is listening, it might entertain him.
So. That was kind of random, Freeman.
That was a good story, Don.
Yeah. Thank you, Karen.
Hey, Karen, thank you so much. What are you training for right now?
So I DNF Javelina over the weekend.
Oh, that's right. Tell us about that. I thought you said DQ'd. You DNF'd. Okay.
I DQ'd Bigfoot. Yeah. So Javelina, I thought I saw you. Maybe it's just your doppelganger.
It might have been. I wish I could have been there, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was great. It was in the mid 80s at the start. I mean, during the day, and it got warmer on the second loop. But overall, it was my first Javelina, and very impressed with the logistics and the organization, and the volunteers were amazing. They know all the details, and it's like a trail rave party out there at the headquarters. So. Yeah, I'm going back next year.
Good, good. That's what racing is about, right? Experiences, yeah. And a chance to regain and redo.
Well, I hope to see you there, COVID allowing. I'm going to be there too. So,
yes, time for redemption.
Time for redemption for sure.
Karen, thank you so much for your question. Very good question. Thanks for listening and coming on.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
See you, Karen.
Bye.
I would say a successful first event, right, guys?
Yeah, this was a training run.
And I think just getting out here for the first time and announcing we're doing it and having people see what's possible and join in on the fun, I think we took a chance of calling the race and showing up and saying next year there's going to be more people that want to run it. AJW, thank you for joining this and taking the voyage on the very, very first call-in Ask TRN Anything. We appreciate you coming on and taking the chance.
Oh, this was fun. And I hope whoever you invite to do it next has as much fun as me.
Well, it might be you, AJW. we can think of anybody else.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, audience members. Thanks for joining those who had tuned in to listen to the podcast. Go out and run.
Mas.
Mas.
Ah, look at that.
Hey, Karen said you. Mas.
Way to go, Karen. We'll take that. Karen's awesome.
It takes a team of people to finish a race. It takes a team of people to put together a podcast. And we want to thank some of those people.
Our Patreon supporters, we appreciate their participation.
We want to thank especially our business Patreon supporter, Doug Crumley at Crumley & Associates. You can find him at DougCrumleyJr.com. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant.
We'd like to thank our producer, Doug Mayer, and our associate producer, Ryan Warr.
And especially our social media expert, Yana Gibalova, who just joined us and is doing a wonderful job.